Hello and welcome to The Thriller Zone. I'm your host, David Temple. And on today's 106th episode, I am happy to welcome Lisa Ballantyne. Lisa is the power behind The Guilty One, Little Liar, Once Upon a Lie, Good Bad Love, and her latest, The Innocent One. Please welcome one of the masters of psychological thrillers, Lisa Ballantyne, on The Thriller Zone. Yes, how are you, Lisa?
Not too bad. How are you?
I am splendid. I am spectacular. I just got back to San Diego from the frozen mountains of Tahoe, Lake Tahoe.
Oh, wow. And what were you doing up there? Or
just hanging out, riding, you know.
Nice. Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for some time, and we're going to talk about The Innocent One, and this is where I usually hold up the book and go, we're going to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm going to do. Let's see if I can. I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to insert the picture later. We'll talk about The Innocent One here in a few moments, but let me put this down. But let's do this. How about we get to know you just a little bit? I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but I like to know, you know, what you're up to, where you get your influences, what influences your particular style? Who are some of your favorites? Just to, so I can get to know you, because I can go to your website and read, oh, Lisa this and Lisa that, but this is what's really kind of cool.
Well, I've been writing for a long time. I'm quite well traveled, you know. I've lived overseas and traveled, you know, to all the continents, Middle East, Africa. I think partly my writing's been informed by traveling and meeting different people from different cultures, because I really don't ever write what I know. So that's one thing. I'm always reaching outside myself towards something else in some other situation. And that's true as well of The Innocent One. Another thing about writing is I always tend to deal with difficult subject matter and, you know, trying to shine a light onto dark corners. So I think often these are kind of challenging subject matters that readers struggle with, and everyone in society we struggle with, but they're the things that I'm really drawn to try and unpick in my book. So I think that's kind of a little bit why I write the books that I do. And in terms of influences, oh wow, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say that any of the novelists and books that I tend to read directly influenced my work. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of Margaret Atwood, Elizabeth Strout, Joyce Carol Oates, Michael Ondaatje, Toni Morrison, you know, these authors who, yeah, they've written some thrillers in their time, but they're perhaps not known as thriller writers.
Yeah, and that's really good, a great starting point, launching point, because that's what I took from you. There's a couple of things. First of all, you're talking about travels and your sense of place. One of my favorite things, one of your sense of place, very clear that you've spent time in a lot of different climates, for instance, and locations, and the way you paint those pictures. I'm kind of a nut for those things. And your style, like the people that you mentioned, the artists that you mentioned, are very literary. You're very literary by nature. And that's a great compliment, by the way. And just great, what's the great word? Rich, dense, chewy is another word I like. But, you know, looking at your book, and I'm glad you brought up about the darkness, because let me look at it real quick. Yeah, I don't see a lot of unicorns and rainbows in there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. So this story is about a little boy who was on trial for murder for killing another child. And now 10 years have passed and he's grown up. So it's really looking at the potential for change in an individual. And also if someone has committed a crime, can they atone for it? Can they change? Can they become a different person?
The Guilty One was your Let me see. Wait a minute. Yeah, that was your debut, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Lee Child calls a terrific debut. And if you can get Lee Child, who knows a little something about writing.
Yes. Yeah. I saw him. I was at the Edgars and he was there and I saw him across the room and he's so tall, you know, it's very easy to spot him, but I didn't get a chance to thank him in person because that was very generous of him indeed.
Yeah, that's as a lot of the conversations that I have on this show, that kind of a blurb, and it goes much longer than that, but a terrific debut is the shortened version of that. To have that accolade can just send you into the atmosphere if it's timed right, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was very grateful that he took the time to read and quote.
And as we're looking back at your litany of books, there's five of them, I'm assuming, out here. Let's start off with, so The Guilty One has no book, that one-line pitch on the cover. But let me give you an idea, folks, if you're not superlatively familiar with Lisa Ballantyne. Little Liar, Two Sides of the Truth. And I'm going to get to a point real quick. Once Upon a Lie, the line is, the truth can hurt, but a lie can hurt more. Good, Bad Love. There's a fine line between good and bad. Love that one. And then The Innocent One, The Child Accused of Murder, Who Did He Become? So back to your comment about darkness. And I find it such a, I'm assuming, and I have not read all of your work, but I'm assuming that a lot of your time and research is spent dealing with, it feels like, hurt children, untruths, lies being a prevailing theme throughout, right?
Yeah, very much so. I think there's quite a strong theme of nature and nurture running through all my books and about difficult childhoods and what that creates, what the outcomes of that are, both positive and negative, for the people involved. And the other thing is that the books I think are all very much, because while they're all psychological thrillers, they're all very much, I would say, why done it rather than who done it. So it's almost trying to uncover the reasons why bad things happen, rather than just who's the murderer, that kind of idea.
Now I've been around a little while, but I've never heard that phrase before, and I really like it. A why done it instead of a who done it.
Yeah, it's maybe in the UK we say it a bit more. I feel like it's become quite well used here now. But I think I've always thought that was true about my novels. That you know, quite often the plot is turned about so that you're not necessarily guessing who committed the crime, but trying to really understand why it happened in the first place and what's happened to the characters as a result.
And what I love is when you dive into multiple points of view and then you lead the reader on this journey that makes you feel as though, oh, I'm going to figure out who did it. And then maybe you even get to that point, but back to your phrase that I'm going to abuse now throughout the rest of the show, is finding out why they did it. Because what did I was on the show recently with Joe Kenda, and he has a TV show on Investigation Discovery, and it has to do with homicide hunters and he's talking about a book, Thriller Killers. And what I find fascinating, and he referenced, is we all have the propensity somehow to be a killer. Now, we're not all born killers. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that you don't know, you don't wake up one day going, oh yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to go kill someone. But you can be pushed into a corner in the heat of the moment. And then you find out, oh, maybe I am that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. And beyond that as well, there is the opposite situation where maybe you've been given a grounding in life, a very difficult, challenging grounding in life, maybe experiencing a lot of violence and abuse, which may predicate you towards becoming violent in your adulthood, but it doesn't necessitate that. So it's kind of exploring about all those borders that we cross as human beings as we develop, and how we manage to get rid of the darkness in our own lives.
And sometimes we're good at that, and sometimes we're not.
Exactly.
You did one of my favorite things in the whole world. And if we had the time, and I read a lot of books, Lisa, I read 2, sometimes 3 books a week. Mm-hmm. And I'm always curious as I pick up the book. I often won't read the blurb on it, the jacket cover. I often won't do that because I don't want to know anything. I want to just jump off the diving board and into it and see, you know, what you're going to surprise me with. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to read the opening line of this book for my audience.
Yep.
Because it is so dang good. So here it is. Frankie walked to work, enjoying the early morning air, unaware that today was the day she was going to die. Okay, you start with that. You're not going to go, that was a good, I'm going to sit this down for now and I'm going to go grab some tea or lunch or something. How many times, come on, tell us, between us girls, how many times did you fight, edit, tweak, go back and forth? Or did you, out of the clear blue, one day go, I've got the opening line?
Yeah, I think with that... It just came out like that, because the thing with the guilty one and the innocent one, unlike some of my other novels with multiple viewpoints, they're all written from a solo point of view, which is the point of view of the criminal solicitor Daniel, who is representing Sebastian, who was once on trial for murder. And so the entire book is written through his perspective. But realizing that at the beginning of the book, a woman dies, I didn't want that to be from his perspective, because I thought after that she'd just be a dead body, you know, right? That whole thing about sort of another dead woman in a book. And I really wanted, in a very short, brief prologue, to give us an understanding of who she was as a person, and you know, just to let us get the feeling for her. So that prologue I did write quite quickly. I'm grateful to you for saying that about the first line, but I don't think I did agonize over it terribly much, because I was just trying to focus on giving us a little snapshot of this woman, Frankie, before she unfortunately dies.
Yes.
And so that's really what I was trying to do there.
As I mentioned at the top of the show, I just returned from Lake Tahoe, where I got to work on my own piece of work, finally. I mean, I've been doing the shows for quite some time. And I have found that one of the best, I don't know if this is silly or not, I don't really care. One of the best things I can do to stimulate my brain, well, there's 2 things. One is to escape to a location that is unlike anything that I'm usually hanging out in. Because if I'm in this studio, and if I spun the camera around, there's stacks of books and cameras and lights and all this stuff, and it's distracting. But if you go to a new location, it's a blank slate. So I tend to see that. Now, driving up there and back, when you're just doing this, this is driving, Lisa, by the way, in case you're wondering. When you're driving, you know, your part of your brain is, you know, focused on being safe and driving. But the other section of your brain is free to just dance around. And I'm getting to a point, I trust. Those moments, sometimes a line will come out of nowhere. And I think the reason I'm telling you this is because I wonder if that sometimes happens to you. A line will come out of nowhere. And like, Frankie walked to work and enjoying. She wasn't aware that was going to be the day that she would die, right? So something like that, just as innocuous and free as that. And sometimes that's the very best thing. And you're like, oh, you're scrolling to write it down because, like, does it get any better? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, because you're a writer too, and I think we all have these little moments when we get little gems, which we have to hold tightly in our hands, because there's other times, you know, where it's a real slog and you're drafting and feeling around in the dark. Because I'm terrible as a writer. I don't plot. I don't sit down and map out all the scenes and things. And so for me, there is quite a lot of writing which is feeling around in the dark. And that can sometimes be a lengthy process. It's maybe not the quickest way to write a novel.
So you don't do any kind of outline whatsoever? You just kind of go, bang?
I have a rough outline, but I think It's because I'm just I'm impatient. And I like writing. I don't like sitting down planning things. also, I think I very much focus on my characters. So I think it was F. Scott Fitzgerald said, plot is character, character is plot. And have faith that he was right. But I think that's so true. Like, for me, the characters are very, very important. I know them well. And I think if I really do know them, I can follow them through the story in a sort of natural, organic way. Of course, yeah, I do a little rough plan, but I do go off on tangents, and things do happen which surprise me. In all the novels I've written, there's been something which has almost happened that I didn't see coming, which I enjoy. And that's like a real high point when you're writing a book. But there's the opposite. And people who carefully plan their books, I think, don't have these kind of brick walls, you know, where you're writing, you haven't thought it through, and you're just writing, and then it ends up being words that you cut out and you have to redraft.
It's so funny. I've been doing this show for a little over a year, and if I was going to just pull a number out of the air and say plotters versus pantsers, and I know you know what that phrase is, I would say it's somewhere between 50-50 and maybe 60-40, 60 meaning plotters that really enjoy the outline process. I'm kind of with you. I like to be surprised. Now, I gotta have an idea. Like, if you're going to take a trip, you know that the trip is, there's the destination. So you got a pretty good idea of how to get there. But if you want to get there faster or more smoothly or avoid road closures, You're going to take a map, et cetera, right? But so much of the joy is just if you go, okay, I know kind of where I'm going to end, and I've got this character and I've got this character, then so much of the joy is in that discovery, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, that's what I enjoy in it. And I like when they start to run away and become real and interact with each other, that almost in a way you didn't see coming, which is just a real joy.
And on that same point, have you ever done this? Have you been, you're going in this direction, you go, oh yeah, I got this covered, I know what they're good. And then you have an idea and you're like, oh, wait a minute, what if we go down this path?
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a moment in this book, The Innocent One, where that did happen. And I've got to be careful how I talk about it, because it's a bit of a spoiler. But yes, that has happened to me as well, when I think, yeah, this is the end point that I'm going towards. And then you reach a point in the story that you think, I think it would be really interesting if we reveal this now rather than at the end. And it kind of turns it on its head. So it's not that sort of whodunit that you maybe thought it was, right. But it's revealing something early that allows the reader then to begin to examine why that's been revealed so early and what it's telling them about the story and what they think is going on.
Yeah, and for those of my listeners who sometimes catch themselves pulling a Billy Crystal moment, I'll call it, that I can't recall the love story. I want to say Harry Met Sally, when he would jump to the end to find out what the end was. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Was Am that I quoting Harry? I don't like it. Also.
Oh, no. What was it with?
Harry Met Sally is always kind of, you know, it prefaced with them as older people, isn't it? Remember, it starts off with all the old couples, and then it goes back to the beginning to tell the story. Yeah.
point being, don't jump to the end of this book. That's what I'm trying to get. All right. I don't like, I'm not a fan of asking where ideas come from because I find it so, well, besides boring, so ridiculous. But I do like to find out writers' particular motivation or a motivating factor that comes into the play. Because I'm a student of life and a student of a craftsman like yourself. So as you begin crafting the story, you know, again, not where the ideas come from, but are there particular motivations or motivating factors? Could it, you know, it could be a little bit of an influence of a news headline or that you would turn on its head or something like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I studied psychology, so I think like my influencing factors is always, as we were saying, that trying to unpick and understand people. And particularly when I was writing this novel, right back at the beginning of the story, when Sebastian was on trial for murder and Daniel was representing him, they were still just ideas in my head at that point. But the newspapers in the UK were filled with stories of two little boys from Sunderland who had nearly murdered another couple of children. It was a horrible crime, and the newspapers at the time were vociferous, and they were invoking other children who had killed. We all know some of the famous ones in the UK. And I think it was during that time when I was reading about these different stories that these characters were in my head, and I really got the idea for almost making the two characters, the lawyer and client, as little inversions of each other, to juxtapose them so that one story throws the other into relief, so that we find out that there are two stories running through the book, which is really about the lawyer and his childhood in care, in foster care, struggling with the loss of his mother, and how he was, as a child, a very violent little boy, but the love of his foster mother managed to turn him around. Juxtapose with the little boy on trial for murder who was experiencing similar abuse in his childhood home that perhaps drove him to potentially commit this terrible crime. So I think it was those headlines at the time which really started to fuse that story in my mind.
That makes so much sense. And if it's not too personal, do you have children of your own?
I don't know.
Okay. I was going to say, then I think I could probably make the argument on either side. If you don't, then you're always searching to find out what it would be like, especially and how harrowing this would be. Conversely, if you did have children, then you would be writing with an inside knowledge and then can only fathom what that would be like. So...
But I think we all have the experience of being a child. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really important for me in this book, in The Innocent One, that Daniel not only had to deal with Sebastian, the client, and was struggling with his own marital problems, but also that he was a father, you know, a father of a young 8-year-old boy, so that he could sort of see these problems that he'd been wrestling with all his life from a different perspective, from the perspective of a parent and someone who was actually responsible for shaping this young child's life.
Let's take a short break, and when we come back, how dark will Lisa go? Stay with us. The best thrillers,
your favorite authors, the Thriller Zone. And now back to the show.
Do you, and this, I'm going to refer back, because this popped into my head, I'm going to refer back to a comment you made earlier about darkness. And do you ever find yourself leaning over and staring into the dark abyss of humanity and asking yourself, and I hope this isn't really crazy, but and asking yourself if you can go darker?
No, I don't. Well, first of all, I was like, I don't think I'm a very dark person in my day-to-day. But certainly some of the books that I've written so far, I find they are heavy, heavy subjects. And often people are surprised, you know, when I go to events and I may be reasonably bubbly and and lighthearted, and they don't necessarily equate that with someone who had written these books. But I think I'm never motivated by trying to shock or sensationalize. I'm never thinking, oh, I want to think of something really dark and grisly to write about. That's never the case.
Yeah.
Always it begins with characters, and often they're in situations which are real life situations that, you know, we have witnessed recently, and I'm just really trying to unpick and understand those situations. So, for example, Little Liar, that was about sexual assault, and you know, that whole thing about sort of sex and power and society. It was always in the wake of the Me Too movement. And then we have this novel here, which is really about child-on-child murder and childhood violence and the reasons for it. And yes, these are very dark, difficult subjects, but I'm interested in understanding them rather than, you know, seeking something that is dark and difficult just for its own sake.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably the opposite. I like the dark stuff, and I my wife will turn to me sometimes, and I'll come. An idea came to me recently, and I shared it with her, and she went, "And I'm married to you. That's I need to. Maybe I should sleep with one foot on the floor." Here's my an idea that I was thinking of as you were talking about that. As I was researching you, and I'm looking at your pictures, and I'm reading the press on you, and I'm like, "This is a delightful, sweet, charming young lady." And then you read the darkness and the heaviness. And so, yeah, to your point, I can imagine people going to your book signings and going, oh, you're rather lovely. Instead of,
but I think it is true. You know, you've got the Scandi noir, and then in Scotland where I live, they call it tartan noir. in all of these places, you know, like the north of the UK, in Scotland and in Scandinavia, you know, we do spend, like it is right this moment, a lot of the winter in darkness. You know, it gets dark at sort of 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and so I don't know if it is this sort of geographical misery which brings out some of the darkness and the stories from this region of the world.
I can see it now on the next headline of your book. This subject matter is due to geographical misery. Be forewarned. If you're afraid of the dark, you know. Anyway. Well, The book is delightful. The characters are real. The ambiance, as I said, is poetic and literary. I mean, it's a fun read. It's very enjoyable. And I loved getting to know the fact that you, in this interview, that you're a student of psychology, because it makes so much sense now, the way that you see the way the mind works in the story. And I've always been fascinated by that. And I think that I would almost challenge writers to spend some time reading books on psychology. And if you were in school, to take a minor in psychology, because there would be such a depth and texture and additional knowledge that would come to you that would really help flavor and color the characters and the stories.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I've always been interested in developmental psychology in particular, you know, which is that sort of how a child becomes an adult and what influences we experience in childhood inform the kind of adults that we will become. So that's always been my sort of driving interest in that area. And I think that definitely comes out in my books, because again and again I'm returning to that theme of nature, nurture, and how that affects the characters.
Well, would you like to wrap the show in a little more lightness in a little episode I call Rapid Fire Questions? It's just easy, light, and fun.
Okay.
Really super easy. So when you're writing, do you prefer a quiet library or a noisy cafe?
Quiet library. With some music.
Well, you can't jump because the next one is for inspiration. Do you like silence or music?
Classical music.
Classical music, of course. Okay, so you wouldn't put on Friday the 13th movie soundtrack. She's shaking her head no.
No, sorry.
Yeah. For stimulation, coffee or tea?
Tea.
You said that with a hesitation.
Yes. Well, because I always have coffee first thing in the morning, but mm-hmm. for writing, green tea, yeah. Which is still has quite a big hit of caffeine in it, so it's still stimulating.
Right, stimulating and healthier too. So if you take road trips, I'm a big road trip fan. My wife and I do it a lot. So what is your preferred genre of music? Like you're just going to roll the windows down and roll through town after town.
Oh, wow. I mean, probably something nice and sing-along cheesy. So either some sort of 90s rock or even some country or something like that.
You and country? Really? Name one country artist you like.
Well, Kenny Rogers, maybe.
Okay.
Just on a road trip, though, in no other situation.
Yeah.
Just because you need to have something you can sing along to.
Sure. And ABBA, maybe ABBA? ABBA?
No. I don't like ABBA.
No. Okay. And last, if you're gonna disappear to a retreat to write, would it be more preferable to scoot away to a secluded mountain cabin or a busy oceanfront?
Well, definitely the ocean is a combination of the two because I've got a little family caravan by the sea that I escaped to write. So it would be the cabin by the sea rather than the busy oceanfront. So it would be a sort of seaside retreat.
Cabin. A seaside retreat. Now I am thoroughly jealous. And it's secluded, so you when you go there, yeah. Oh my goodness, you are
little caravan. I think you don't call them caravans. What do you call them? You call
bungalow?
I think you call them trailers or Winnebagos or something.
Like oh yeah. So can you drive it?
No. Okay. It's just a little miniature cabin. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it would be a single wide or a double wide a trailer. Yeah.
Yeah, just right on the seashore, so you can actually see the waves moving. And I've written most of my books up there, not all the entire book, but for some of the time. And I love the water. I think the water really works with writing.
Same here. Wait a minute, what's your sign?
I am a Leo.
Fire. Oh, okay.
Are you a water sign?
I am Aquarian.
Okay, so you're an air sign.
Yes, and I like water, so I get energized by water like yourself, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, if you'd like to find out your horoscope, no, I'm kidding. To learn more about Lisa, go to lisaballantine.com. It'll be down at the screen. And of course, you can follow her on social media, as I do. And this has really been delightful, and I thank you so much for putting up with a little bit of complications of pulling this together, but it's been a lot of fun.
It's been so much fun. Thank you so much for having me on your wonderful show, and all the best for your own writing as well.
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you. And I would be remiss if I did not ask, and I know we want to make sure that we're talking about the current book, The Innocent One, but I have a note when that book actually dropped.
So it dropped November 1st.
That's it. Okay.
Pegasus books in the US.
Awesome. Well, I wish you huge success.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I've had a great time. It's terrible that I came up with the phrase geographic misery.
I'm going to be stealing that one. And what was the other one I'm going to steal?
Why Done It.
Yeah, Why Done It. I love that. So good. All right. Take care now.
Thanks so much.
Thanks again to Lisa Ballantine and her latest psychological thriller, The Innocent One. And is it so innocent? Hey, come out next Thursday, folks. This gentleman, Philip Fracassi. Look at the size of this thing. Ooh, baby. I could use this at the gym. A Child Alone with Strangers. Look out, Stephen King. You got some competition here. This thing is amazing. It's going to take a little bit of time to read it. Clocking in close to 600 pages. But let me tell you something. We're going to cram every single solitary minute into that hour when Philip Fracassi joins us on the Thriller Zone next week. Quick little reminder before I go, I want to say thank you so much for your kind comments on both, Twitter. We've got them on Apple Podcast. We've got them on Google Podcast. Your comments are so welcome. YouTube, our subscription is growing, and we couldn't do it without you. So please do us a favor. Stop on by the YouTube channel, youtube.com/thethrillerzone, or you can go to our website. That's the easiest, thethrillerzone.com. There you can listen, you can watch, you can drop us an email, you can drop us a voicemail right there easily.
Hey, David, we love your show.
You'll see a little microphone, record it, and we'll add it to our social feed or play it on the next show. Either way, we thank you so much for being a part of our audience. I'm David Temple, your host. I'm out of here, got some reading to do, and I'll see you next time for another exciting edition of The Thriller Zone.